We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you are always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account.
I'm really excited and slightly anxious to announce that my book, The Autistic Burnout Workbook, is releasing this next week. It comes out March 11th. It's available for pre-order right now. I am trying to avoid falling back into burnout. When you release a book, there is a lot of pressure to do promotion and to market and to get the word out there. So this is my burnout prevention form of marketing. I'm running a special right now for those who are supporting my work through pre-ordering. You can submit that information after you pre-order, and we will get you a coupon code that you can use toward our store for the same amount. So the workbook costs $18.99. So then you'd get $18.99 to use in our digital shop or in our Etsy shop, which would get you another digital workbook for free. So you buy one workbook and then you get a digital one for free. That is the promotion I'm running. It's technically a pre-order promotion, but I've been a bit behind on getting the word out. So for listeners of the podcast, I'm going to extend that. If you buy the book in the next month, you can go ahead and redeem the special. The link for that is in the notes below. Thank you so much for supporting my work. It means so much to me, and I just really appreciate you and hope that you will find this a helpful resource for you as you continue to build a life that is a bit more resilient to autistic burnout.
Hey, everyone. You are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Divergent Conversations. Today is the finale of our series on Worn Down and Worthy, hashtag not your typical wellness. And I have remembered the tagline now because I am no longer in super major Eeyore depressed mode from last week when we were recording episodes 1, 2, 3, and 4. So if you listened to us last week, we went through some wellness tips that are often given to us that don't necessarily work, and then some adaptations on how to make them a bit more useful. And today we're going to continue that conversation, and then we are going to wrap up the series. So glad to be back on here.
Yeah. Likewise.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go.
Last week, we ended with sensory. And the next thing on our list is health advice that requires too much executive function. Ooh, this is a big one. And this one is one that I really relate to because immediately upon looking at some of the things y'all have submitted, like I immediately see meal prep for a healthier diet, too much planning and task switching involved. I'm just going to say this, like y'all, I cannot tell you how often I order delivery. And it is so helpful for me as an accommodation to not have to task switch, to not have to think about it, to ensure that I'm getting some nutrients in my body every day, like without having to always leave the house. It's just so helpful for me. And I have felt a lot of guilt around that at times. And in reality, like I am so internally grateful for it. And I even think during Hurricane Helene, when it wasn't an option, it was really, really hard because it threw off all of my routines.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that one because that is one. Well, because we bump into our privilege there. Like you're in a position where you're able to do that. And then we can feel guilt around like, oh my goodness, I'm so privileged that I can do this. Or maybe the shoulds of like, I should be able to batch cook or.
Yeah.
Food. I mean, food's a huge one to accommodate around. And this is an example. I saw a reel recently about how like why it's so expensive raising neurodivergent kids because they were reflecting on like, where's all the money going? And they were listing all the things. And I actually felt emotional watching it because there's times where I'm like, why is our budget what it is? It feels like we're not being responsible. And then I'm like, oh, right. Like we've got ARFID going on. We've got like, we've got so many things and food is a huge one. Food's expensive for everyone right now. But then when you're also trying to build in accommodations around food, that is massively expensive and can bring on a lot of shame of like, I'm spending this much money on food or anger of like, why am I in a position where I'm needing to spend this much money on food? Egg prices. They were supposed to go down, Patrick.
I haven't checked because eggs really gross me out. But if I had to guesstimate what they were in Western North Carolina right now, I'd probably get maybe $7 to $8 a dozen would be my conservative guess.
Yeah, we don't buy eggs. So I have no idea either, but that's wild.
It is wild.
That's wild.
But going down, y'all. Coming soon to a store near you. I mean, I think meal prep is hard. And one thing I've learned too with the throat issues that I've had and then like the throat surgeries is how important smoothies have been for me too. Because I don't always feel like chewing or want to be chewing. Sometimes I'm really grossed out by eating in general. And smoothies have definitely been a lifesaver in a lot of ways to just allow me to get nutrients and calories and not have to go through the steps of meal prepping as well.
Same for me. And especially when I get into the habit of actually making them, it's a great way. So I think a lot about like nutritional density. How do I get some nutritional density into my diet? Because left to my own devices, it's like frozen bean burritos three times a day. And so the green, doing a green smoothie and I've played around with it a lot to get the texture the way I like it and to make it work for me. But that is the way I get some of that nutritional density when I can get myself. It's the blender. It's the blender's so loud. That's the thing that.
It really is. One thing we started doing at times, because we used to try to meal prep a bunch of smoothies, right? Like put them in like the Ninja bullet things and put them in the freezer and then all you have to do is pop one out and blend it. But then even that was becoming like unbelievably cumbersome and I just couldn't do it. And just buying like the bigger sized version of, I can't remember the brand name, but it's like.
I know what you're talking about. Like the green smoothie brands. Yeah. I've done and that at times.
Buying like the 2 gallons of those or whatever and drinking those every day. And even that, super helpful for me, and it eliminated all the steps of and the shame that comes with the steps. That's always what it is for me. It's like my mind goes into how could you not just put a couple of things in a blender and blend it, and in reality it's just, you know, it's not always possible for me.
Same. Especially if it's so I know a smoothie is good for me, but I'm not motivated by it by taste. So it's like, this is a good thing to do. And it's like, and then you have to clean the blender and then you have to
that's the worst
cooking
part.
And this is where I'm very privileged in the sense that I'm married to someone who's mostly neurotypical. I feel like I shouldn't say mostly neurotypical. I feel like neurotypical matches. Technically he's gifted, but I feel like he had the idea of identifying as neurodivergent doesn't click for him. And he's got amazing executive functioning and he actually enjoys cooking. So, and a whole joke of like, it spends out like hours to keep this family fed. Yeah. And so that is a huge, like, I literally do not cook unless I'm cooking a frozen burrito. And then when he goes out of town, we joke or we'll joke like when dinner's on mom, it's DoorDash because so it's that's my version of That's my version of cooking is like DoorDash.
It's still getting the needs met, you know? And yeah, Ariel will joke with me if I do try to cook, because I actually am a good cook. Like, I make food that tastes good. It's just the fact that sequential steps and order and like tracking all of the things that need to be happening at the same time. And then she'll come home and it'll be like 20 pots and pans in the sink. Mm-hmm. And she's like, how are you not cleaning this as you go? And I'm like, I didn't even, that's not a thing I can do. So
No, cooking is so, and for a long time, like I was a stay-at-home mom when my kids were young. And I think Luke would be confused because he'd come home from work and I would have like, and partly I had like young kids also. And I was like, following a recipe is so hard for me. So the kitchen would be a mess. And then there'd be a pretty crappy, like kind of dinner on the table, but then it took me like an hour. And it was just, And I, especially as a woman, I had a lot of shame around, I was a stay-at-home mom and I can't like do the domestic tasks that a good mom or a good, like, I don't like the term wife. It doesn't, I can't connect to that, but like quote unquote, a good wife, is supposed to deliver.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of shamefulness in all of this and like, and your executive functioning struggle, like it's hard. It's really hard. So that's one piece of health advice that requires too much executive functioning. The next one, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, I was going to jump to adaptations, but I think we could, or should we adapt them as we go?
Yeah, let's adapt them as we go. Yeah, let's adapt them as we go.
So meal services, I've experimented with a lot. I think the one, so like there's Green Chef where it'll come like pre-cut. I think the one I've had the most success with, but then is Hungry Roots, where it's similar. There's, if you have RFID in the family, it's helpful because there's more selection. And you can search by like, I have 5 to 15 minutes. And then with that, like the price, I mean, it's hard to say, but I don't know that the price is that different than like grocery shopping.
Right.
So there's different meal services. I've experimented with Factor 5 before, where I think it's Factor 5, Factor, where you literally like put it in the oven or put it in the microwave and it's a meal. And that's worked well for me. So there's also, in addition to, Luke likes to say it as like getting a private taxi for your burrito. I think someone on social media said that instead of like always getting a private taxi for like our donuts or our food, that there's also like meal service options that can, it's kind of an in-between option of can ease the burden a little bit.
Yep. And another adaptation can be, well, for me, and this would probably go back more towards the sensory / well, executive functioning too, but mostly sensory from last week, is like, I hate stepping foot in the grocery store, as so many of us do, and having your groceries delivered via like Instacart, or even we have supermarkets here where you can order it and just like go drive up and pick it up and they'll put it in your car. And like that stuff for me is life-saving and it saves me an enormous amount of stress.
And this is, I've also seen like some cool neurodiverse community, like this is where neurodiverse community can do cool things. Like I know someone who like she's really good at work. And so she's good at like essentially making money, but has a family member who is really good at cooking and like hires that family member to come cook for her. And like it's kind of a beautiful example of, well, if that thing's easy for you and this thing's easy for me, how can we, is there a way like we can both get our needs met here?
Yeah, it's a really nice symbiotic relationship when you can incorporate that into your lifestyle. One thing we wrote was drinking lots of water, not effective for someone with a chronic illness, and that electrolytes are better.
Yeah, I saw this comment on Substack and I was really glad. I was like, oh, I'm glad someone's mentioning that, because that is a common like wellness, like make sure you drink enough water. And then, but yeah, if you've got POTS, or if water drinking is hard for sensory reasons, or you just forget, like, electrolyte pills, I use those regularly, as do my kids. And that's been huge. Do you use electrolytes?
Yeah. I have those like liquid IV pouches and those are really helpful. And then have electrolyte like salt stick tabs that I have used since my soccer playing days that have always been really useful too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like a great example of that's an easy adaptation for water drinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else is on here?
Someone mentioned green smoothies.
Yep.
Not working well. That's, yeah. I mean, I know we talked about smoothies working for us, but I think smoothies can definitely be hit or like touch and go for autistic people, especially, and need to be like tweaked a lot if they're going to work at all. And then for some people, it just, they will never work because of the texture.
Yeah. One adaptation that you wrote down was choose warm, blended, or cooked foods if raw greens feel harsh. That soothing foods count too. And I think that's important to remember. Mm-hmm. That soothing foods absolutely count, and, you know, trying to take away some of the pressure of what people tell us we should be doing for our bodies.
Yeah. Actually, this reminds me, Patrick, I kind of want to do a whole collection on neurodivergence and food, because this, like, it's about food, but there's so much this taps into around shame and disordered eating and body dysmorphia and body shame. And so there's just so much when we start talking, and so many of the health tips are often food-based.
Yeah.
And there's just so much complexity around this topic for so many of us.
There really is. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that would be a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I just thought of another adaptation. Again, this is from Claire in my community, who is a functional medicine provider. Claire in the Nook. I don't like saying my community. That's weird. Claire from the Nook. And deconstructed meals. So it's kind of like, think about like a snack tray you'd make for a toddler, but like much more sophisticated. But the idea of deconstructed meals. So maybe you've got like the carrots and the veggies, and that that can be a way that many of us get our nutrients and our food. And I like that. And I like calling it that versus a snack tray. Here's a deconstructed meal.
Yeah. Okay, next up, routines that collapse under ADHD autistic brains. You want to share more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything that's that we're like, oh, I need to do this every day, or where there's an expectation of consistency is going to be hard for us. So some of the things people mentioned were things like morning pages or gratitude journaling again, or just any strict wellness routine. And that makes sense to me. I can't follow anything consistently. So I think part of it goes back to that mindset of like, this is going to ebb and flow, and I'm going to try not to have shame around that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And I like that gratitude journals made another appearance. Clearly a winner for people in terms of feedback that you've received. Okay, so replacing rigid schedules with if-then schedules. So for example, if I make tea, I'll take my meds.
Yeah, and Jesse from ADHD Focus just made a post about this recently, this idea of the if-then, like, so you start, and I talk about this a little bit when I talk about habits, like pairing things instead. So instead of thinking about like, I'm gonna do this, this, and this, it's like, okay, so yeah, I know I'm gonna do my coffee every day. That's an anchoring habit I have. Right. So if there's something I'm wanting to do, how do I pair it on that? Because I'm pairing it onto something I'm already doing. So maybe it's, I'm going to get my coffee and I'm going to say an intention for the day. And then and then after I've done that enough over time, those pairings might start becoming a little bit easier because it'll maybe be not an automatic process, but just like, oh yeah, I get my coffee and I think on an intention for the day. So if then, or habit stacking is what that's called, when you stack a habit you want to have with a habit you already do. So you're not trying to change your life. You're just baking, you're using the architecture that's already there and kind of adding something to it.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Using visual anchors instead of planners, definitely for me, like sticky notes, object cues, things like that. I even do like visual reminders in my phone to pop up instead of like having to have everything in a calendar and having those reminders like, and because I have a Google device, I'll just say like, hey, Google, can you add reminder about A, B, and C into my phone for tomorrow at what time? And then I forget that I've set that and then it pops up in my calendar and I'm like, oh, great. Yeah, there's my reminder.
So there's also like automation in that, which is really helpful. Visual cues and automation for sure.
Mm-hmm. allowing for micro practices, 1 minute reflections, 3 deep breaths, 1 word of gratitude.
Yeah, just basically simplifying it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And that's helpful because of our all or nothing. It can be like, well, I'm going to do this amazing wellness routine. Well, it's like, can you have 1 minute of being with yourself softly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems so much more accessible if we're going to break it down into smaller chunks like that, instead of saying like, I'm going to do 15 minutes of intention setting tomorrow. It's like, well, we'll just set one intention for 60 mm-hmm. seconds.
Yeah.
Anything else on that before we move on?
I feel like that's good. And then just so much is about having the attitude of like compassion for ourselves when consistency is hard. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big one for me. Okay. Ask for help without the tools to do so.
So yeah, some of the Substack comments were things like, call me if you need anything. Just say yes when help is offered. Say no if you don't have enough spoons. So kind of like, I'm guessing from this, like vague offers of help or vague offers of like, just say no, like just have boundaries. Right.
Yeah. And what you wrote down was, or maybe this was within their comment under this. So when you don't have mm-hmm. spoons, these assume social fluency, self-awareness, and clear boundaries, all of which require skills that many mm-hmm. of us are just starting to learn.
Yeah, I really appreciate this comment of like something as simple as just say no if you don't have spoons. That is not simple. Yeah, you need to have self-awareness of like, what, like, am I in burnout? Like, what's happening inside this body of mine? You mm-hmm. need to have like the verbal and social fluency to be able to communicate what you need. Like, this is a complex ask.
It is very complex ask for sure. Help seeking that assumes too much. So instead of just ask for help, try, can you check in on me on Wednesday? Or here's what would help most right now. I love the, like, can you check in on me in a couple of day comment? Mm-hmm. I think that's so helpful for me because a lot of the times, I don't know what I need in the moment. And I don't even, and if it feels like a demand to me, then it feels like even more pressure to come up with an answer. Yeah. So I would much rather say like, circle back with me like in a week or mm-hmm. in like 4 or 5 days and maybe I'll have an answer then, or, you know, just having that check-in in general.
And that also gives you time to process. Like, not in the moment. Yeah. 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 Having help scripts is another one. I like scripts for a range of things, whether it's parenting scripts or self-advocacy scripts, just because it's hard for me to come up with words in the moment. So especially if we are in, you know, for various reasons, there's times in our lives where we will get offered help, like grief, during times of grief or during times of medical stuff. And so knowing that people might be offering open blanket kind of, if I can support you, let me know. So kind of batching some scripts ahead of time can be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Because oftentimes in those moments of grief or medical stuff, it's really hard to know what you need in those mm-hmm. moments. Like, it's hard for me to even think straight, let alone like help you navigate how to help me. I think that's really a challenging component for sure.
I remember that when you had that terrible flight situation going to Ireland and your friends were like, we are just booking you a hotel. And like, how kind that was, because you couldn't think straight.
No.
And they just booked you a hotel using their like travel points. And we're like, Patrick, go.
Yeah, that was unbelievably helpful, because by the time I got done with all of that, so frazzled, so frustrated, so exhausted and just not able to really put two and two together to make sense of any plan that I could make at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then I think related to help scripts is the idea of kind of maybe coming up with some sort of like support menu ahead of time of knowing like, okay, this is what would be helpful. And again, that can be complex for us because we need to know what we need. But I think it's probably easier when we're doing that on our own versus when someone's asking of like, okay, these are the tangible things that would be helpful.
Yeah.
And I can create a support menu.
Yeah. I like that idea a lot. Anything else in that regard before we move into something It is probably a lot of people.
Probably your favorite. We'll end with your favorite. Just that, like, I think receiving help is hard for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And so there's also kind of an emotional regulation piece and maybe shame piece around what does it mean to not be hyper independent? What does it mean to be seen in our vulnerability, to depend on others, to need others? Like, I think for me, it's almost a reverse demand avoidance too of, well, if you help me, then maybe someday you're going to come back and need a demand from me.
Right. Like,
so it's the autonomy piece can run really deep for many of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the attachment piece too, like there could always be this mistrust of like, is there an ulterior motive here? Is there ever going to have to be like, you're going to come back and hang or hold this over my head or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like it feels safer for you never to help me because then I don't owe you anything.
Yeah. Or maybe
that's why I avoided attachment right there.
I'm in the, same boat, working on that as well of receiving. And I think some of it is sometimes like our own like internalized ableism too, of like, I'm going to prove that I can do this on my own, no matter the cost. Mm-hmm. And that can really obviously spiral out of control as well.
I just had an insight and we can cut this if this feels uncomfortable, but I just listened to episode one and we're now at the end of the season where we talk about our rupture. Yeah. And one of the things in that exchange that happened, I'm just now realizing this, you reflected that you were under the perception that you had financially contributed more to the podcast than me, which was not my perception. And it had always been really, really important to me of like, Patrick, send me the invoice. I'm going to, like, the first one I paid beyond 50 because you had been covering it. And I was like, I need to show him I'm like even going beyond. So it's always been so important to me that it's equal. I just now realizing that was my attachment system that got activated, because if you're telling me you've contributed more, I don't feel safe now.
Mm.
If, because for me, safety is in me not owing you anything. So I just now realizing that was my attachment trigger that got activated when I heard that, of like, first of all, I don't think that's true. And that can't be true. And if it is true, tell me how much I owe you.
Right.
Because this doesn't feel safe to me.
What a full circle moment we just had.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here we are, 8 episodes later and rupture repaired.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's probably my least favorite. Affirmations and positivity culture. So some of the comments that y'all gave us were just think positively. Traditional affirmations, which can feel fake or invalidating. Neutral affirmations, like I have a body instead of I love
this
was body.
Sorry, this would actually be an adaptation.
Sorry.
Someone in the comments commented, I appreciate their comment. Their comment was, people will often say positive affirmations don't work for them. What they're not realizing is you have to believe the affirmation. And and it's true, because if you try to tell yourself something you don't believe, it's actually going to create more shame.
Right.
So yeah, this was a comment from someone on the Substack, but what they were saying, they were giving an example of how you can do affirmations
in a way that works. That way. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So neutral affirmations, example, I have a body instead of I love my body, often land better. Yes. Yep. That's so true, right? Just naming the thing that is, I can really get behind, opposed to affirmations that really just feel disingenuous or can really bypass the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so I actually do talk about self-compassion and affirmations a bit, but it's every time I talk about it, I'm like, huge footnote. because even that word self-compassion, I mean, we've talked about that before, like that word I don't even like, but when I've seen it modeled really well, I'm like, oh, okay, that I can access. So if I think of self-compassion as like, this is a hard moment, that I can access. And I think that's what, that is self-compassion. But when we're telling ourselves stuff that we don't believe, then we get defensive. And then like voice number two pops in and is like, well, this is actually why you're shit. And so you shouldn't be saying these nice things about yourself. And then we feel worse.
Yeah, that's so true. And that's kind of what you have here. under affirmations and positivity culture of shift from like, I love myself to I'm learning to be kind to myself. And I think that would land so much better for me in moments, you know, when I'm really struggling in a much more accessible way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Naming the thing that we're working toward, or naming the thing that feels honest. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
What else?
The next one, I really like emotional naming or affect labeling. I talk about this one a lot instead of reframing. And there's actually this really interesting tarantula study that I love citing, where they had four different groups of people that had like spider phobias. And then the task was to walk. I feel like I've mentioned this study before, but the task was to walk up to a tarantula and to see how close you could get. And they put all kinds of like biofeedback or bio stuff on it. So they were measuring like things like sweat and heart rate. So they were measuring physiological markers of anxiety and also how close they could get to the tarantula. And there are four groups. You know, one was a control. One, I believe they were doing distraction. One was positive reframing, like this spider can't hurt me. And then one was simply just naming the experience, like I'm scared or I'm anxious. And the group that then they had them come back after a period of time and do it again, the group that had the most, I guess, progress in the sense of lower physiological markers of anxiety and could get closer to the tarantula was the group that was, all they were doing was naming their emotion. They were just saying, I'm anxious. Not the people who were saying, this spider can't hurt me. Which I think I love that study because it goes back to how simply validating our experience and attuning to our experience can sometimes be the most powerful intervention. And I think especially for autistic people, we have a lot of feelings around CBT often and that attempt to reframe our thoughts. So I think that can be an affirmation of just naming like this is a hard moment, or I'm scared, or I'm anxious. This is harder if we have alexithymia, obviously. So then maybe it's, I feel bad. Maybe that's all we can access, but we can still label it.
Yeah. That's great, because that makes a lot of sense. And just saying, yeah, this is scary, or the example you have here is there's some shame here and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that, just to name it.
Yeah.
You know, just to normalize that it's okay to have these emotions. Mm-hmm. And then you say using contextual affirmations. For example, it makes sense that I feel this way after what I've experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think those are validating. Yeah.
I think this again is really huge for neurodivergent people. We often, like if a routine gets disrupted, we might have a really big emotional response to that, like irrationality that we feel a lot of guilt over. So that is a form of affirmation to say like, it actually makes sense that you're feeling irritable, that your friend brought another friend to the event and didn't ask you.
Yeah. Totally relate to that too.
Yep.
So,
and I think we've made it to the end of that, to our list.
Yeah. Yeah. So, wow. Those are good, because I, again, like, you know, could easily have gone into this last two episodes just picking that apart, right? And just being like, here's why this stuff doesn't work. And that doesn't feel good for anybody at the end of the day, like without having some adaptation or takeaway in things that you could potentially try to use at home.
Mm-hmm.
Which is all Megan Anna's perspective, and my perspective would have been like,
let's tear it apart and make fun of it. I know. But I can tell. I can see my influence.
Much more useful, honestly. Like, it's much more useful. And I think it's good to acknowledge both ands in these situations of like, yeah, these can be really frustrating, especially if not used or said to you without nuance or understanding of neurodivergence in general. It can be really frustrating. And there are adaptations, though, that can be implemented and incorporated. And you can try things out when certain suggestions come up that work for you. You know yourself better than anybody for the most part. Like, you're going to have significantly more insight into what works for you and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's really, really well said. And I like that you say the both and this is why we're a good pairing, right? Is you probably more comfortably can dip into the, like, the rage deconstruction, like, which can be validating, right? Validating of like, Yeah, it is really shitty when someone tells you, just go do this thing. Mm-hmm.
But it can also be really short-sighted. You know, it can be much more focused on the moment. But that doesn't lead to like a reason for hopefulness or optimism the next time something happens, because you're already in that mindset of, see, nothing works anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So holding the both end of like, we do experience a lot of like annoying, frustrating, invalidating advice. And even from like mental health and medical providers.
Sure.
And when we can find our people, and this, again, this goes back to community, which is the through line of this season.
Yep.
When we find our people, it is so powerful. Like my favorite, so about a year ago, we started running courses in the Nook. And my favorite part, so I take some of the workbooks and like turn them into courses. My favorite part, we'd meet weekly, and it was those weekly live conversations with other neurodivergent minds. Like we did the sleep one. And I want to now go back and redo my workbook, because it was those conversations that were amazing, where it's like, well, this is what I do for my sleep. Oh, and this is what I do. And it's having conversations about these topics, these kind of health topics and wellness topics in neurodivergent community, where it's like, oh, well, I adapted it this way or I did it that way. That's where so much beautiful, beautiful learning, I think, is happening, where it validates why these things are hard for us and then moves us into a place of agency and action and empowerment.
Yeah. And it's also a good like reminder for so many of these things that it's really not a one size fits all approach, right? Like things that work for you may not work for me and vice versa, but it's important if we can openly discuss those things as well, because you may have suggestions where I'm like, ooh, I've never tried that before, or with this adaptation, maybe I could try it a different way. And it just gives more of a reason to have a little bit more hope and optimism around things that are really hard.
Well, and it opens up creativity, like what you're saying of my adaptation, the way I adapt something might not work for you, Patrick, but you hearing how I adapt something might for you be like, oh, I could adapt it in this way, because it just sparks creativity. But yeah, because we do all have such different needs and sensory profiles, like there's not going to be like one adaptation that works for all of us.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So as we wrap this up, what has your experience been about doing a collection in this way?
I've really liked it. Like I like the themes we're exploring, and I like that we took this topic of wellness, and then I just love the themes that have merged around collective care, community, creativity. It feels around like how to hold on to our humanity. It feels like I was really struggling with how to record in this new political climate we're in. And this just felt like the right way to reenter the conversation. Yeah. I have loved the batching. I feel like because we're recording more than one episode in a day, I feel like we get into a flow and can go deeper. I love that we can close the loop and it'll be like, we'll reopen this loop in 2 months when I see you again, and we'll be exploring another theme. I have liked that it's just you and me. I loved it. What about for you?
Yeah, no, me too. I think that, you know, the break was necessary for both of us, for similar reasons and for different reasons, like different things happening in both of our lives and things that we're struggling with as well. And it's allowed for us to be more intentional and strategic. And that's something we've wanted out of this podcast for a while. We've joked that like we've felt like we've been winging it and flying by the seat of our pants so often, to be able to just do it with more intentionality and to go deeper and to connect more like this. And I think also, have really enjoyed just doing this, the two of us, because although we've loved all of our guests who have come on, and if you're listening, we've appreciated you coming on here, it's hard for us too. It's hard for us to drop in a conversation and have it feel really like a natural progression and to have that connection. So I think this has been really nice. And there's a lot going on within not only the world and the country, but in the autistic community at large. And you know, some of it is really painful to witness and some of it is painful to experience. And Some of it is really beautiful. And I think that we use the word duality, or at least I use the word duality a lot in the last 2 weeks. And that's what it feels like, right? Is like the both and like the duality of life. And I think that it's been really enjoyable to just have this space in like, in this structure, in this container. And it's been, it's been cool to just talk through some of our struggles too, like personally as friends and people who care about each other, and how much intention we both had, even though that situation happened like 3 months ago. And we're talking about it, you know, from a perspective of 3 months ago. It's nice.
Wasn't that long ago, was
it? Before I went to Ireland in March. So maybe 2 months ago, 2 months ago.
It's May, and it's May 1st today.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it was after your TED talk.
It's been nice to just kind of like acknowledge and talk about stuff publicly like this, because in all, you know, we know that this could also have had a very different impact too. And
yeah. And that if, and that that would have impacted people.
Yeah.
If, I am, you know, I am glad we chose to talk about that publicly, because I think, I don't think it's possible to like run a business adventure with a close friend and not bump into things. And I'm, this feels weird to say, but like, I'm proud of us. I'm proud of how we moved through it. And I'm proud that we can share, like can share that as a model of like, you are going to bump into stuff and it can be okay. And it can even deepen stuff if it's done with care. So yeah, that, that I remember it, like kind of when it happened or after, like wondering like, would we ever feel comfortable talking about that on air or not?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Here we are.
So I had a thought last night I shared with Luke when we were out on our walk, and I'm curious if you feel this. I said to Luke, I was like, I feel like I'm all in on the podcast for the first time. And partly because I didn't know how to like, and it's like the autistic reciprocal thing, you know, so like group projects can be hard for autistic people, or like when you're joining worlds with someone else, that can be hard. And I think, especially because your team did take so much of the like organization of it, and then the design was so different than my design, that I was like, I feel like I've got like a foot in this world, but it's not mine, but it's mine. Like, and then it, it sounds so simple, but when you were like, yeah, take over the design, redesign it, have it match. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, and then when I started, cause I took lead on the Substack, it's like, I feel like I have more ownership of it. And so then I know how to show up to it. Whereas before it was like doing the, I'm trying to do the reciprocal thing that's really hard for me of collaborating on a project, but it's not mine, but it's kind of mine. And so now my head, I'm like, I feel like I'm all in on it for the first time.
I'm happy to hear that.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I'm so fascinating, because we've joked off air about this, and I was like, why did you could have just asked me about the design 2 years ago? And I would have been like, my response would have been the same response that it was now. And it's just fascinating how relationships work, you know, because it's taken a lot of work for both of us to get to a place where we feel very comfortable with one another and like naming stuff that makes us uncomfortable. So, I mean, it's just fascinating to like watch if we use like a timeline again, right? Like from episode one till now, and our friendship and our relationship. And it's just, it's, it feels really wonderful. So I am grateful to be in this space with you. And
yeah, likewise. Yeah. I really appreciate you as a friendship, and as a friendship.
As a friendship. You can tell both of our brains are fried, dude. We just
we've been recording two hours now. I really appreciate you as a friend, and then this project is so deeply meaningful. And I think me getting connected to more people through the Divergent Conversations Underground is making me realize the impact of this podcast, which is also like fueling my all in-ness of like, because of the digital walls I created, I dissociated from the fact people actually listen to this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Everyone's in like different modes of self-preservation right now, you know, and that totally makes sense to me. God, I'm feeling like, I was feeling it during this last episode where I was like, oh my God, my brain is not working anymore. And it's not, but that's okay, because We are wrapping up, and I'm happy that we did it this way. I hope you all enjoy it, and I hope it means it's meaningful right now as we are talking. You know, it's kind of a meta experience, right? Like, we're talking about stuff that's happening in day-to-day life, and that has happened, and this won't come out for 2 months, and who the hell knows what we'll be talking about in 2 months, mm-hmm. because so much mm-hmm. is going to happen. So even if y'all listen to one of these episodes and you take away one thing and it just helps make your day 1% easier, I think that is really the goal here with what we're trying to create.
Absolutely. And we will be back with another collection. So yeah, collections, maybe not seasons. And we will do that.
Yeah, so we will do that. And we don't know what it's going to be on yet. But the beauty of this has always been like, let's just see where it goes. And we really had a loose framework for this collection. And we had like 2 episodes that we knew we were going to do, and the other 6 we did not. So I think that's worked out really nicely as well. Because we just talk and we kind of see where it goes. And that was always like the goal for this anyway, was just to have real authentic conversation and just to see where it went. And I think that's a testament to the strength of this, not just the project, but the friendship too, is like the ability to have just done that 8 times in a matter of a week and a half. And I think that feels...
And I'm not sick of you.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know how you feel about me, but I'm not sick of you.
No, I'm not sick of you. I'm just, my brain is just fried.
Yeah. Let's do our like wrap up and go...
Yeah.
Go get a brain break.
Yeah, brain breaks. Brain breaks on 3. So yeah, you know, as we wrap this up, as we always say, you can find us in a lot of places, and we know that to be true. But really, we want you to find us where it kind of meets your needs and what works best for you, whether that be on YouTube or on our website, just reading the transcripts, or like if you want to go deeper and join our Substack, or simply listen to these episodes on all major platforms. Like, really, whatever meets your needs and really supports you in the way that you need to be supported. So we really appreciate all of your support and listening to this. And another shout out to Jane App for all of you mental health clinicians who need an electronic health record. Use code DCPOD, and they have sponsored this collection and have been a really good support system too. So we're thankful for that. Do you have anything you want to throw into the mix?
No, that was beautiful. Just
all right.
Just yeah.
We'll stay beautiful. We will see you in 8 weeks. And thanks again for listening.